This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Welcome to yet another episode of Richer and the Mailman. Somehow we keep coming back. I don't understand.
It's the 11th anniversary of our first show.
That's amazing. Well, I don't know if it's amazing. That's definitely that overuse of the word that Louis C.K. talked about. But it really, I'm just surprised that we were able to last this long.
We're driving our way towards the 100th episode. We should already, like, book a hall or something.
I think we should. I think it should be I know the place we should book.
Because it's exactly... Boneheads. You know, we should book Boneheads for 90 weeks from now. Ish.
Ish.
Give or take.
Wow, when you put it that way, that's scary.
Yeah, are we going to do, a Christmas show?
Well, I believe we're going to do a theme show for every holiday that comes up, including this one. But...
Well, then this should be our last non-Christmas themed show, because... Halloween's like a few weeks away.
Yeah, but the Halloween creep. Oh, by the way, in case you've never been here before listening here, I'm Josh Richer. And next to me is Jeff Machado, a.k.a. The Mailman. And this is Richer and The Mailman, which you should know because you've clicked on it. But I don't know. You might just be one of those willy-nilly clickers.
We're actually Richer and The Mailman. It's not like Hootie and the Blowfish where the name doesn't actually pertain to anybody.
Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do when Jeff quits his job or gets downsized.
It'll be easy. We'll just have to change it to, Richer and the Stay-at-Home Dad or Richer and the Card Attendant.
I like that.
Whichever I roll into.
My other thought was, what if you ever get frustrated and leave, and do I just insert a new person into the show and also call them the mailman? Is that just the person next to me every single time?
You'll have to recruit another mailman, though.
Another mailman who can talk about all the things that I can talk about. I don't know, man.
You can't be misrepresenting the post
office. I don't think you can be replaced, and I mean that
heart. Well, we have a 400 episode contract, so
yeah, they're tough here, a place to be. They don't let you go. They don't let you go easily. But we're gonna honor that contract, so we can move on to other blog sites, host podcasts.
There's always an out clause. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah, I'm just gonna shit on their desk.
Yeah, what was it you were saying? You were looking into something. Like how to run a show and the voices are considered the talent. It's just a funny way.
It's a funny way of
make
saying.
Make sure that the talent is properly staged and it's weird.
Shh, don't talk about that. That's something we're going to be announcing in weeks to come.
Ah, a little teaser there.
Yeah, a little teaser. Something cooking. So it's Columbus Day weekend, or actually for us, it's Columbus Day weekend is in the rear view because we took the weekend off, recorded a little later than we normally do.
Yeah, I mean, no more Breaking Bad. We can record any day of the week.
It's great. It's great. I feel so free and at the same time so sad that I have no more bitches to hear.
Yeah, I feel bad for all the Breaking Bad fans just crying on their couch, like waiting for the Richer and the Mailman breakdown.
I don't know if they're listening to us. I think they were like...
They're still listening because... Back in the mind, they're hoping that we're going to find, we got Bryan Cranston on this week, and we're going to talk about...
Well, I'm still promoting this on Breaking Bad sites, so... It's getting harder, though. It's getting harder to somehow tie that in. It's like, we talked about Breaking Bad for all this time, but now we're not, so check us out anyway, because we're like you.
If you like Breaking Bad, then you're going to like everything that we like.
Everything we like, everything we do.
I think it makes sense.
It's a fun holiday weekend, Columbus Day, because although Labor Day marks fall, or the end of summer, it's like you have that weird month of September that is like almost like it's no season whatsoever.
September is totally contingent upon how hot it is. If it's hot, then people are still feeling like it's summer.
I call it a Redskin summer.
Redskin summer.
Yeah.
If it goes below like 70 degrees, then all of a sudden it's fall and people are like talking about their Halloween costume. Oh my God, you're never going to guess what I'm going to be for Halloween this year. Oh my God, it's going to be the best thing ever. You know, when people start talking about their Halloween costumes like 2 months in advance, it's never that good.
No, well, that's
usually like something that everybody's done a million times.
That's not totally true. Last year, I knew someone who was the woman in Beetlejuice when like her...
Her head unzips?
Her head unzips.
Or is it her jaw? Yeah, I know what you mean. Her mouth opens.
Yeah. She was that costume.
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was actually really awesome. But she obviously started working on it very early on because she had to make the costume. And she would periodically post things on Instagram. So for that, I was thankful. But most of the time, you're right.
All right, I guess I'm wrong.
Okay, no, most of the time, you're right.
No,
just not this time. Just not that time last year.
That woman is the bane of my existence.
I'll have to introduce you to her. So, Columbus Day, though, that's pretty much the official start of autumn as we know it. At that point, it's been getting a lot chillier up here in the Northeast in the past few weeks. And I know that I spent Sunday of this weekend out at kind of like it's like a harvest festival. It's an art festival.
Yeah, they just kind of block off a rural street and they got a bunch of crap you can buy.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's a lot of bad art or like art that you would find in people's houses.
Knick-knacks.
That you don't even notice. You know, like, oh, you got a painting there. Cool. You know, nothing truly great. And then a lot of antiques and then a lot of like random foodstuffs.
By any chance, did you happen across a homemade chess set that was modeled after the artist Modigliani's paintings?
Well, it's funny you say that, because no. Oh. I didn't know you were looking out for that.
Well, yeah, you know.
Things you gotta inform me when I go to these very specialized artisan fairs.
I really thought this was the year. I have a reason for bringing that up that I'll come back to in a little bit.
No, it's because you're obsessed with chess, but that's one of the reasons. But we'll get there. So, Jeff, how do you feel about the holiday of Columbus Day in general? I'm not Italian, so I don't lose it over Columbus Day. Like, it's just a holiday weekend. I do other fall stuff, and I have the day off, but it's never – well, actually, I have every Monday off, so that's not even affected.
Well, I'm kind of jealous of the Italians because as a Portuguese man, I really don't have a holiday that I can, like, go crazy over.
I hear you.
Like, there's no Vasco da Gama Day.
Oh, why not?
I don't know. I think what he did was a lot more impressive. Sailed around Cape Horn, went around Africa. He probably killed way more people than Columbus.
No, he didn't. Because Columbus was a barbaric man, as we've learned.
Vasco da Gama was bad, man. He used to take people on this boat and like burn them and stuff. He was terrible.
Really? How did I miss that? I feel like that would have been something that I would have been super into in school.
Well, learning because beats. I was Portuguese and they had a list of explorers and like, do a report on one of these. This guy's Portuguese. Jeff, you're Portuguese. Do him. And I was like, okay. And it was like, it was some very strange facts I came across.
Portuguese guy, you want to catch some fish for me?
But that gets me to when you say, how do I feel about racist. Columbus Day? When I think Columbus Day, I think two things. One, it's my sister's birthday. So that's kind of like a good way to remember. You should always get married or something like that on a very big holiday. Don't forget your anniversary. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, that's Casey's birthday. The second is it's such a fraud holiday. What does anybody know about Christopher Columbus? Well, you go back to like 7th, 8th grade or whatever. When it's like they talk about Columbus as discovering America. But all anybody knows about him was that he sailed the ocean blue in 1492.
Yes.
They know the name of his boats. And that's it. And there was, like, some stuff about Queen Isabella.
Also know that he didn't actually discover what he was looking for.
Right. He was looking for the wrong thing. He wanted to go to India. Happened across a country where there were already civilized people on it.
Yes.
Well, there was already a society here.
Yeah.
So, but they don't tell you any of that in school. And then I'm just thinking about, like, when I was that age, when I was younger, I thought I was pretty smart. You know, I got good grades, and I was like, oh, this school stuff's easy. They totally failed us, man, and they didn't teach us anything. Why didn't they give us more complex textbooks about Christopher Columbus? You know, there's a whole bunch of other stuff about Christopher Columbus that we could have learned that we didn't learn.
Well, the problem is the stuff that we could have learned about him is, you know, not exactly flattering.
Exactly.
To say the least. But that's the...
But we would be smart.
That's what I wonder now, though, is, like, I don't have any kids, and I don't really get involved in my friends' kids' schooling at all. Never really asking them, so what you learned in school today? I don't know why.
They can't possibly be any better than we... They're just getting dumber by the day.
Well, that's my assumption.
Look around when you go to Walmart or something.
Well, they just have their faces buried in electronic devices, so, I mean, I assume that their imaginations are stunted. However... They know different information. I'm going to assume. So what I wonder is, what do kids learn about Columbus now? They're not learning. They can't be learning the same exact things because there's too much of the backlash about that picture of Columbus. So they've got to tell him something. But do they tell him everything?
Well, the great thing about today is for the more inquisitive kids, they can just go on Wikipedia.
Oh, the internet.
Yeah.
It's not just for porn.
We didn't have that back then.
No, we didn't.
We had Oregon Trail, which was not educational whatsoever.
Oh, it was awesome, though.
It was pretty awesome.
For anyone that's ever played the Oregon Trail, like, it's kind of like a... It's not necessarily a badge you wear, but it's one of those reference points. Like, you start bringing up, like, typhoid, and immediately your head goes to, typhoid, the Oregon Trail, I lost all my family.
That's some serious business.
I had to give away some wagon wheels just to feed those motherfuckers.
We can't take typhoid lightly.
And then what happened when you gave away the wagon wheels and they died anyway, later on you broke down and you didn't have wagon wheels and you died.
Basically, every way that that game ended was you dying. You couldn't actually get it.
Well, even once you got there, if you forded the final river, like when you had to go down the, I think it was the Columbus River, and you had to go around all those rocks, which was some really groundbreaking graphics for the time. Like, it's like the whole game was nothing. You did nothing except sometimes shoot animals. And then at the end, it's like, you're going down the river and you have to miss all this stuff. It's like.
They spent like nine years on that scene.
Yeah.
And the rest of the car, we don't have much time.
It's just so funny because it's like all of a sudden you're not doing anything and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I have to actually do something to win this game. There's actually hand-eye coordination. That's insane.
They knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
They try to get you to sleep and then...
So we have that, and they have Wikipedia. So they get to know at least a little bit about Columbus. But if you want, Jeff, and you can say no, I could go to Wikipedia and see exactly what.
No, I don't care about Christopher Columbus. The point is, when we were in school, it was too easy. They should have been teaching us harder subjects. They should have been making us. Why were we reading crappy books that we were reading, like Build Your Own Adventure crap? We should have been reading Crime and Punishment, and War and Peace, books like that nobody ever reads. Because once you get to an age where they tell you to read it, you're too stupid to read it. You can't keep your attention for more than one page. As I said last week, but when I said that no one reads them, I made an error. Because my friend, you might be surprised.
I still don't believe it.
I'm actually friends with some intellectuals, and I offended them. My friend Matt Izzy, being one of them, has actually read Crime and Punishment and Moby Dick.
So wait, he was offended by you saying that no one reads them?
Yes. Because for those people who have actually...
Now, if someone voices their offense about the fact that they weren't included in a list of incredibly arduous books that most people will never read...
Well, see, that gets me to my War and Peace principle.
Okay. Yeah.
Here's the thing about reading War and Peace. You can read War and Peace, but you can't ever tell anyone that you read it. Because if you tell someone that you read it, you sound like a total asshole.
Yeah.
But if you've read it, and somebody asks you if you've read it, then you can say yes. And that's impressive. That's basically, you can only read War and Peace for the intellectual enjoyment of reading it, for the experience. But then you can relish in it if it becomes a topic of conversation, which it did.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt heard the conversation, and he was just like, well, actually, I have read it.
But,
so it's not the same.
No, he was not asked.
He was not... Did we ask? We indirectly asked him. Because he was challenging my statement of fact. Which is that no one has read it. You see what I'm saying?
Well, we obviously know that someone has read it. Because
someone has read it,
because the books are there in the bookstore and there's multiple...
Well, someone has read it after it was written when there was nothing else to do. Like, why would anyone, given all the resources that Matt Izzy has, like Apple TV... in the internet, why would anyone choose to read a long, boring book from hundreds of years ago? It doesn't make any sense. But he somehow did, and congrats to him. What he didn't do is, you know, post on Facebook that, oh, I've been up to a lot of great things. I just finished reading War and Peace.
Yeah, that would be actually, if I ever saw that on Facebook, first I would insult them. Probably their mother, possibly their wife, depending on their situation, whoever's most important to them. And then I would probably defriend them.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, John.
No! Am I going to have to defriend someone?
You're going to have to defriend someone. If you're friends with this particular person, there is a teacher that we had in high school who takes the War and Peace principle to its highest level. It basically makes me right about everything that I've ever said.
Okay.
He was the teacher that everybody loved. Like, oh my God, this guy's so great. His name was Mr. Poisson.
Oh, I loved that guy.
Of course you did. You know, he was the religion teacher. He used to say words like fuck and pussy in class. And he used to teach us how to touch a girl's G-spot. And like, oh my God, this guy doesn't care about the boundaries. And he used to be a Buddhist monk. And he's a licensed doctor who's teaching in the high... Give me a break. That guy... All those
cool
stories.
Stuff. All cool.
All stuff. Those stories were false, by the way. And I was like, I hate this guy. Like, he used to give out tests where the test answers were in words like B-A-D, B-A-D, B-A-D. And in some stupid kid in, like, the cool kid circle would get a hold of the test bank and just tell everybody, hey, guys, it's bad. But I didn't know that. So I would actually take it, and then I would get my test back, and it would be like B-A-D, B-A-A. And I would be like the only idiot in the class who didn't get 100. And be like, oh, Jeff, you did a good job without figuring the thing. Yeah, no one figured out the thing, okay? They were just telling each other, and I was out of the loop. Point being, this guy goes on Facebook and says, I've been brushing up on the classics. I just finished reading War and Peace. And he was friends on Facebook with one of our friends who's currently in England.
Oh, I know that guy.
I kind of miss him.
Sometimes.
We'll probably never see him again, though.
Never. It's so far.
And so his name is Mark. He tells me of this Facebook post. So he friends Mr. Poisson, and he asks him if he has his book. Now let me tell you what happened. Let's go way back to high school again. We're about to graduate. Mark was one of those guys in that cool circle of people who thought Mr. Poisson was the greatest person in the history.
Yeah, he loved him.
Not a pretentious douchebag like I knew he was, because I was smarter than everybody else in high school.
Clearly.
But he had borrowed a book of Hieronymus Bosch artwork. Very expensive, very thick book with pictures and stuff.
Well, he was an artist.
He was an art history major for God knows what reason.
Bosch did art, so the pictures are...
Well, I'm not trying to downplay the fact that there were pictures in the book. They
but what we're saying is it was one of those very nice artist books.
Yeah, it's one of those books that you go and like you only buy for someone that you're like married to because it's too heavy to carry. It's like really expensive. It's like a prized possession. You inscribe it on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just like you toss it on the table to collect dust kind of book. Anyway, he borrowed it from this teacher of his that he had admired for God knows how many years. Four, exactly. And Mr. Poisson, without even saying hello to the man, says, do you have my book? Totally insulting to this man.
Well,
we just thought he wanted to have a conversation.
We should point out that Mark stole his book.
No, you're missing the point of the story. So many years later, Josh, you still don't get it.
Yes, okay.
Hello, Mr. Poisson. Give me my book. That was how the exchange went.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even remember that you had my book. Of course I remember. It's my book. So this man is already, without even asking for the book back, accusing him, being accusatory, that he's stealing his book. This Mr. Progressive man, he was living in a van down by the river. He was living in the woods. He was like, he had a crossbow and a canteen, and that's it.
None of this is true.
That's the kind of...
He lives in Wakefield. He goes to University of Rhode Island artist symposium talks.
Yeah.
I've seen him. He didn't ask me for Mark's book, though.
Did he or did he not tell us a story about how he had a dream about a rug and woke up and wove the rug out of nothing?
That was an actual story.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go. That's all you need to know about this man.
It was a cool rug.
Totally pretentious jerk.
I meditated on that rug.
So Mark, as he would, hence our being best friends, which maybe you don't understand this part of our brain, decided to never give him the book back. So we graduate, move on, yada, yada, yada. Mark's telling me the story about the book. He's like, I would give him the book back if he had just asked for it or if he would have been nice to me. And, you know, it's been 10 plus years, however many, 15 years.
Yeah.
It's not his book anymore. There's a little thing called statute of limitations.
So you're saying this happened again on Facebook recently?
Yes, after the War and Peace thing, Mark was like starlight because he had already heard of my War and Peace principle.
Returns.
He says, "Hey, Mr. Poisson, how you doing? Hey, Mark, do you have my book? Are you serious?"
That's going to be – he's getting old, Mr. Poisson.
15 years later.
So I'm thinking and that's his what final words are going to be like, "Get my book back."
Here lies Mr. Poisson. That asshole Mark Mazzenga never gave me my Herodotus Bosch book back. Oh, man. So, yeah. There are two kinds of people in this world, Josh, is the point of the story. There are Mr. Poisons and there are Matt Izzy's.
Yeah.
Three kinds. There are people that would say that they're reading War and Peace – people who've actually read it, and most of us who are just never going to read it. And that there you go. Mr. Poisson is going to just... I need to find like the perfect way to torture him about this book. Like, I don't know. We haven't come up with this together.
Well, actually, a very simple way would to be start... You need to be friends with people that he's friends with on Facebook. And then you need to get them... You need to make a post about how, like, Mark just gave you a Hieronymus Bosch book. And then get all those people to start commenting on it so it shows up in his feed.
Yeah, I had told Mark when it happened. I'm like, don't defriend him. Just take a picture of the book and make that your profile picture.
Oh, man.
That would have been perfect. I need to read a book about how to be a troll. And I need to troll this whole situation.
You don't need to read a book on how to be a troll. You just need to talk to me, Jeff.
Okay, well, you can help me out. First, we're going to torture him with the Bosch book.
Trolling 101.
Second, we're going to quiz him on War and Peace because I bet he doesn't know shit about that book. Fraud.
One of the things about being a troll is you never fully engage. Ooh. Because that's what people want. They want you to actually engage on a normal scale. But you start quizzing them about War and Peace, that's not really being a troll.
Is there any way to troll a War and Peace quiz without it getting back to you?
I don't know.
Live update kind of thing.
Well, we'll talk about this outside of the studio here, which, by the way, I got to say, is looking very festive.
Yeah, we got the Halloween stuff going.
I like it. It's really getting me in the mood for something.
You doing the zombie pub crawl?
No. Pub crawls are not something that I can do anymore. I just feel like I'm just getting too old to really be able to hit up so many spots. And, like, I don't want to be that guy who starts on it and then, like, an hour and a half, 2 hours later is like, well, that's it.
I made my appearance in my zombie makeup, and now it's time to hit the old dusty trail.
Plus, last year, people that I know were talking about it. For a few people that don't realize, I'm sure in a lot of states and cities, there's zombie pub crawls that happen this time of year. And basically, people get together, dress like zombies, and then act like assholes walking from one place to another, walking in the road, all sorts of things like that. I saw people last year complaining about it, just saying it was just so overwhelming because it just exploded, probably because of The Walking Dead. And just
zombies are hot right now.
Zombies have replaced vampires in this culture. So it just exploded, and there's just too many people. And once it starts spreading out to the average Joe, we'll say, you know, the typical person who can't handle themselves outside of their house or in, like, large groups like that, dressed like zombies, is just ruined.
Then it's time to bounce.
Yeah.
Not culty anymore.
No. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. It's not that it's not culty. It's that it's just become too much.
So wait. Speaking of people replacing zombies with vampires, because I know you love zombies.
I like both.
I'm getting the sense that maybe people are embracing, like, dressing as zombies to sort of, you know, quell their deep-rooted fear that maybe someday they'll come across zombies. Now, I can never tell if you're being ironic or not, but do you actually think that someday there will be a zombie apocalypse?
Well, no, not really, because in order for that to happen, it, like, something, the precursor that happens in the movies, which is usually some sort of nuclear war or a chemical spill or something getting released into the air, causes it to happen. I mean, I guess that could happen eventually, but I say no. But at the same time, I'm not going to rule it out because I don't know what chemicals that the government or private companies are working on. I don't know what they're capable of.
So you're thinking...
Logic tells me that'll never happen, but then the other part tells me, well, you never know.
I think that you're giving a little too much leeway to this, you never know, like, what is it, like, less than 1%, maybe, you think?
Oh, yeah.
That they're engineering chemicals to reanimate dead people, is what you're telling me.
You can't rule it out.
Okay, we're ruling it out, and we're going to have to reevaluate the friendship. I can't be friends with someone who thinks that zombies might happen.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't really. It's not like I don't sit there and go, yep, zombies could happen. Yep. I'm not making a bunker or anything. I'm not, like, sharpening my arrowheads.
If you saw a zombie, how would you react? Would you be surprised? Or would you just go straight to fear? Because me, I think I'd be surprised for a couple seconds.
Well, there's always the disbelief in anything. Like, that time that you got thrown through a window. Obviously, my initial thought was disbelief. Like, wow, did Jeff just get thrown through a window? This can't have happened. And yours was disbelief as well, because you started playing with your wounds. And that's not something that someone who was, like, actually, like, that wasn't in that state of shock and just like, whoa, this just happened.
Well, I realized I'd been thrown through a window, but I wasn't in denial about how serious the wound was.
Yes.
Because I'd never, you know, I'd never had a bleed like that before.
not a lot of people have.
Yeah. But now I know not to panic.
Yeah.
Just wrap it with a towel, be fine.
But yeah, no, if I saw a zombie, I would probably at first be just to say, what is that? Is that a person? What's going on? And then I'm assuming there'd be a stench.
Well, say.
A stench of death.
Forget
that. I'd probably take off. I'd probably just take off and run.
Yeah,
that's your best bet. Run. I guess get in a car, but don't get on the highways because they clog up. Like with any disaster. That's the thing. The weird thing about zombie movies or any, when you start getting into that, it's not really about the zombies. It's about human nature and in the face of, like, horrible disasters that envelop everyone.
Why do the highways get so closed up? Where is everybody going?
Because they're all trying to leave, but they all say, we should get on the highways and do it. So then, what are they going to do? If anything happens up ahead, you know, like, zombies come and start ripping people apart, or cars crash or run down, now you've blocked up everything and now you're just sitting ducks.
Yeah, I think we should all have off-road vehicles.
Like tanks that could climb over vehicles?
Yeah, sort of like a Jeep, only more versatile.
Nah, well,
they could just make it so it converted, like, yeah, Transformers.
That would sound great. Let's do it. George Bush was right! Well, SUVs!
We have plenty of time.
So, Jeff, you your weekend was a little bit more ridiculous than mine, I'd say. You had a friend who turned 30, which, what do you do when you turn the ripe old age of 30 and you're getting up there in age?
Well, you have a quiet dinner.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go out with a couple of your best pals and you have a drink at the bar and you say, I'm 30.
Now, do you rent a party bus and
make
all your friends get completely
unless, of course, you're just a crazy, crazy person like my friend. You rent a party bus, which is an actual school bus, like a full length.
It was an actual school bus?
It was an actual school bus.
Wow.
Which was hilarious because
you drunk people and now you're going to be like, I'm on a school bus!
Yeah, obviously the bus driver was cool and she brought a friend, so there were like two bus drivers. And they're like willing to do whatever was necessary, like go wherever, you know, take people if they got sick. But they just kept worrying about the smell. Like, it's going to smell like alcohol on Monday for the kids. How are we going to get this smell out?
I have to stop you here. Now, when you – because my thought when you originally were talking about this weeks ago was that you were renting like one of those party buses. Like,
yeah.
One of those ones.
Turns out a school bus is a lot cheaper.
Where did she rent a school bus from?
The town.
Are you sure? Are you sure this wasn't just she had a friend or she knew someone that...
No, man. Apparently, haven't you ever seen a school bus on the highway at night? Apparently, this happens all the time. If you think about it, when we were kids, that weird smell was probably like partying adult vomit that they couldn't quite get out. That's what that smell was.
I thought some kids just got sick on the way to school before me.
This whole school thing is a big racket. They're getting all their money. They got so much money in tips, like, you know, because people are like handing them tips when they're getting off the bus. But then, like, the guy who planned it, gave him a big tip. They were working for like 3 hours.
Wow. That's, you've totally enlighten me as to what happens on our school buses.
But yeah, speaking of being too young,
do you think kids
find
condoms?
I'm sure there's been stories of that.
Oh, right.
I mean, given the group, I wouldn't have been surprised if I turned around and there were two people banging. But turns out most of the people were married anyway, so.
Married people don't bang. It's a fact.
Not on buses. Oh,
only when they're trying to procreate. The only kind and of then people they had the best sex.
The only kind of people who would bang on a bus are people who don't think that they should be banging. Like, they don't want anyone, like, oh, let's do this because a married couple would never just be like, oh, let's have sex in public and let's
so
have
you're
some
saying
kind
married
of crazy fetishist.
I tend to disagree. I think some married people just want to fuck. Oh, that sounded weird. The way it came out.
That was vulgar.
It came out vulgar. And most of the time, I use that word a lot, but.
Yeah.
Oh, so I apologize. If you're tuning out now, I.
Made me a little sick.
Then you can't hear me.
Sick to my stomach.
But I'm sorry.
Well, let's try to get past it.
We're over it.
One is, you rent a school bus because you want to get everybody together. You don't want to worry about designated drivers or people going home early. You want everyone to just be able. They let us drink on the bus. Everybody had, like,
I assumed.
Everybody had, you know, just, you didn't have to hide it. You just brought beers on the bus and, you know, Four Loko and shots and Everclear. There was a bottle
Four
of Everclear.
Loko?
Yeah, we have some hoarders. We have people.
That stuff
hoarding.
Has got to be out of date by now.
Fine, but it's alcohol. It's not going to go bad. It tastes the same. Did it ever taste good?
I don't know. I've never had it because it seemed like a stupid thing to drink.
Yeah. She must have she must have cleared out every liquor store in the area.
Well, I would imagine. She's got an appetite for that.
This supply is not running. They stopped making that formula, like, what, 2-3 years ago? And she's still got plenty. It's crazy. Four Loko, caffeine and hard alcohol together.
Well,
and then it's an amazingly unsafe combination.
Well, we used to do the Jaeger or the vodka Red Bulls, and that was just weird because that was just like you feel your heart start to go crazy, but at the same time you're drunk and it just
yeah, it's bad news.
Bad news.
Four Loko is much worse.
Not good. Much worse because
much
it's
worse.
Crack.
It is crack.
Because the FDA has not approved any ingredient in it.
It doesn't taste safe to drink.
No. Well, you guys are also having, like, four-year-old Four Loko.
Yeah.
Those are the things that go bad. It's not the alcohol. It's the other ingredients. It's like you wouldn't crack open a Pepsi from 4 years ago.
Sure I would. I just had I was in a gas station the other day. I saw Fifth Avenue. I was like, oh, Fifth Avenue. I opened it up. I forgot that Fifth Avenue. They don't make Fifth Avenue.
Oh, really?
Then I looked at the date, and it said 2011. And it was all, like, white. I still ate it. Because it's a Fifth Avenue. Why would they ever discontinue it? It's a delicious candy bar.
It's the last Fifth Avenue to exist, and it's all mine. Oh,
it was like, wasn't that episode of The Simpsons? Homer was saving something, and it was like green, and he's like waiting to eat it.
I feel like we should know that, considering you just said The Simpsons was one of your top shows.
Well, I'll find it out for next week.
Yeah, we'll find it out. Well, corrections.
But you get the bus so that everybody's together, don't have to worry about driving.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't. We had a group of 20 people. There were zero kind of people that would want to be a designated driver. We're talking about 20 drunks here. It's not like back in the day, you know, you get a drunk driver, you want to hold on to them. You want to just, like,
designated
keep them around.
Designated driver, you mean?
Designated driver, yes.
Yeah, you want to hold on to drunk drivers, too, so they don't get in the car and drive. But
for different reasons.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, Mark, speak of the devil, from England, he was the best designated driver of all time. And that's, like, pretty much that's the only reason we were friends. It kind of just grew up out
yeah,
of the
you know, from
driving.
There, it's like, well, this guy has some other characteristics that I enjoy as well.
So if he were here, then we wouldn't need to get a party bus, but then you get a party bus, but then you just drink so much because you're just so excited about being on a party bus.
Well, I got to tell you, someone who grew up in a hardcore punk there's a lot of straight edge kids, and they were the best drunk drivers because there was
yeah, but they were intolerable. They were, you couldn't
the
hang
one,
out with
no,
them.
Not the ones I knew. My friend Kirk. Kirk Emerald Snow, a local artist in the New England area, if anybody wants to check that out.
I thought I'd seen him drinking beer.
Oh, now he does. But when we were, like, in college and even, like, a couple years after, he was straight edge. So pretty much every time he went to a show, me, the guy who's like, oh, we're going to a show, I want to get drunk and mosh around, he was the guy to take us home.
Well, there you go. At the age of 30, there are no more straight edge kids.
There are no more straight edge
after
kids.
After you turn 25, you decide, you know what, life is just too sad. I need something.
I actually know three. I know three straight edge kids now, and I'm getting the feeling they're older than 30.
And they're all miserable.
No, they're not all miserable. They're actually
You're ruining every argument.
However, the thing is, you start to think, well, are they just doing it now because no one wants to be the no one wants to be the guy that drops out now?
They're playing a game of lifelong chicken.
It's lifelong chicken is exactly what's happening, which I condone because every time one drops, it's like
the masturbation contest on Seinfeld.
Exactly.
Somebody's probably just faking it at this point.
No. Well, we've thought that in the past, but. But your experience, Jeff, so you got the party bus, and the party is happening, and
how'd that work out
for you?
Well, it's a momentous occasion. It's your friend's 30th birthday. You want to remember stuff, but you drink so much, then you just stop remembering. I only remember like an hour of the whole entire night. What's the fun of that?
Seems like a waste.
So then you saw me on Sunday. I was just a half a person. I'm still only kind of like 90%
of the person. Yeah, it was very strange.
I'm still kind of like missing pieces of my brain.
That's what it was like with you. Like you were there, but you were not there at all.
Yeah.
I was scared. I was worried.
It's like I end up somewhere. How did I get here? I don't know.
Initially, I thought you were depressed. Then I found out you were hungover. And yeah, then I went, it's Sunday.
It's a crazy Sunday plus party bus hangover. So yeah, maybe I'm too old to be on a party bus. Maybe you're too old to go on a zombie pub crawl. So I'm gonna have to find out next like landmark birthday, or Halloween, we're gonna have to find out what the old people are doing. I'm gonna have to do that.
See, I don't even know what old people are doing. It's sad. It's like
they're having
living
babies.
Like we do, like Peter Pan in some way. You kind of stand with one foot in that like. Like, I'm older, so my body physically can't handle it anymore, but it's like I still want to be that guy who's like, yeah, we're having fun, we're out, it's Saturday night, getting drunk, but it's like, you just...
It's a tough road to walk, balancing both sides, I don't know.
Yeah, eventually I'm going to fall over into one. Hopefully it's not the drunk one.
You probably will be falling into the drunk one, because... I don't know. What am I going to do for my 40th birthday, for example? Is there not going to be a party bus involved?
No. Unfortunately not.
Okay.
But we've got a lot of time before that, so.
Maybe if we have enough money.
Jeff, if we start planning now.
Maybe we can take a cruise. But guess what people do on cruises?
Oh, my God.
A cruise is just a floating party bus.
That's true.
For 7 days.
That's true. And most people I know that go on cruises, what they talk about is, oh, man, we spent so much money on liquor. And then we bought liquor when we docked, and then we drank it on the cruise.
We're gonna take it home.
We're gonna take home this rum from Jamaica, but then no, we never made
this once in a lifetime opportunity to get this amazing liquor that my husband loves. Didn't get it.
Now, Jeff, I know the PTB Godfather this weekend. He had another thing too. He had a lot of guys in town because the wife was away. So you know, when you're a married man and you've got a kid. When the wife's away and the kid's away, you go out and party like you do. And he also expressed a lot of hurt after that. I don't think as much as you. But did you get it? I couldn't do that. But I know they went to Boneheads multiple times this weekend.
Yeah, sadly, I did not make it to Boneheads.
They were waiting for us. They reserved a table for us.
Yeah, we had a little placard, which were in the mailman.
Yeah, that felt good. That felt good. Not going to lie. Yeah. You know, we're making waves in this wacky town.
Yeah, we're making waves, and I hope to get there as soon as possible because I got a serious wing craving.
Yeah, no, well, that's the funny thing about that place is that you go a couple weeks and you don't have it, and you're like, I need to go to Boneheads.
Yeah, I could go to Boneheads every day of the week. That's a fact. Just try. We're gonna make a checklist and try to try all the different kinds of sauce.
Well, they're working on that, actually. They're actually printing that out.
Yeah, sort of like a mug club for a bar.
Yeah, well, they have a mug club, but they just had to...
They should add a wing club.
Yeah, well, I think that's what
they're
trying
to do. You try every single kind of wing and you
don't tell them how to run their business. It's doing very well.
It's a comment box.
No, I agree.
On a podcast.
Now, some people, though, like... I mean, I like chicken wings, but some people really don't. And because, as we were talking about this before, they get... I guess there's something about biting into meat with bones that just reminds people of where it actually is coming from.
Yeah, the boneless wings have become increasingly popular.
Yeah.
Because to eat a chicken wing, like to really get all the calories off it that you can, I mean, you're crunching off like cartilage and stuff,
yeah.
Ripping two bones apart.
It's a lot of work.
And after a while, you start to think this was inside an animal that was killed.
Outside an animal. Because it's their wings.
Well, no.
I know. It's in the skin and everything, but it's the funny thing about the wing is semantics. It's like a fingers. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it could be like that, but.
But either way, yeah, it's that weird reminder.
It's
that
part of a chicken.
It's a macabre reminder of what you're actually doing.
So do you ever think about that and say, oh, you know, maybe eating meat is a bad idea?
No, but I have. But even then, no. See, I was vegetarian for 5 years, as you know.
That is correct.
Very strict. Very strict vegetarian.
Very strict vegetarian.
No gelatin, even.
And you were a vegetarian because of your moral principles.
Moral principles.
Because you didn't want to hurt the animals.
No.
Oh.
It had nothing to do with killing animals. I'm all for the slaughter of animals for food. Except not in the way. My issue was like factory farming. It was like, well, see, it'd be one thing if like someone had a chicken in their yard and they were like, we're going to kill this chicken here and we're going to cook it and eat it. And it was raised humanely and it, you know, was able to like eat what it normally eats and just, you know, live a normal life and then was killed. Just like I'm not opposed to hunting. My issue was this chicken that I'm eating now, this chicken was not living like that. It was living in a box on top of other chickens, stacked on top of each other, super high and covered in feces from the other chickens. And yeah, and then they just get killed like in a horrible way. Like my issue was that. And the same thing with like the other animals, cows, pigs, whatever. So it's more that, and it's like at the time, because I listened to so much hardcore punk rock where vegetarian and veganism were like, and animal rights were, especially at the time, in like the mid-90s, late-90s, early 2000s, it was such a big, heavily promoted thing. It's like, well, this is what I should do.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that's what their songs were about.
Well, it was. There was many songs
about. They had songs
about.
There
was a band called
veganism?
Earth Crisis. They were straight-edge vegans, which are the most intolerable people in the world, except for Rich Gashion, which he doesn't listen to this podcast, but he's a nice guy. He's a straight-edge and vegan. He's one of those people. He's the guy that used to bartend at Trinity downstairs.
Has Rich read War and Peace?
I don't know. We should ask him.
We should ask him. We can tweet it at him. Tweet it at Rich.
Oh, by the way, Richard and the Mailman has a Twitter handle now. It's at Richard N, like
letter,
the letter
N.
Mailman. Because Twitter is...
The Mailman.
Was it The Mailman? Richard N, The Mailman? Richard, I thought it was Richard N. Mailman, because Twitter sucks, and they won't let you use too many letters.
Oh.
And Ram,
we should probably check
Ratmum, just didn't seem right. So.
Yeah.
But, so if you guys want to hit us up on that, that's cool. Their songs are actually about veganism, and being vegetarian, and being straight edge. I was listening to them today, actually. I still listen to that music, just I don't care about their message anymore.
Well, here's the thing, because, you know, I love animals. I hate killing animals, but I just love meat so much that I will never turn to vegetarianism. And it strikes me that, you know, when you consider how these animals are killed, you know, they have all these videos now that you can watch,
yeah.
And they show the chickens,
what,
like the baby
that's
chickens.
That's what converted me.
And the pigs all pushed together, and
it's horrible.
The cows being castrated with no anesthesia, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's really sad, but is vegetarianism solving the problem? I don't think it is.
No, the thought is that if you're a vegetarian, that it's you separating yourself from the problem. You're saying, I'm not going to participate in it. I'm not going to do it. I have a moral objection. Could even be a religious objection. Buddhists are also, a lot of them are vegetarian.
Buddhists?
So, yeah.
That's weird.
No, it's the whole thing about every living soul, and you don't want to. You know,
so Buddhists believe that animals have souls?
Yes, that we actually are reincarnated into animal souls.
That is so stupid. I'm gonna like research Buddhism.
Well, I disagree. I tend to believe in Buddhism, a lot of their tenets. But regardless, it's I forgot where you were going with that.
Well, if it's not solving anything, okay, you can say they're removing themselves from the problem, but if it's not solving anything, there must be a way to solve the problem.
Well,
all you gotta do is get a bunch of people, you just you politically.
It
get
sounds
people
like
together.
You're describing PETA.
Well, no, because PETA is they're a bunch of creeps.
Yeah, they're PETA.
They got
PETA
mad at Manu Ginobili for killing a bat that was terrorizing an entire stadium full of San Antonio Spurs fans for like a half an hour. and they got mad at him for killing the bat.
It's funny because I've killed a bat before when I was vegetarian.
Because they're pests.
He was terrorizing my house.
Do you know what they call?
He floated by in the most abnormal way through my living room. Like, just, I'm just sitting there watching, like, I was watching this insane anime called Fooly Cooly, FLCL, and I'd never seen it before. It was back when Adult Swim used to show anime every night. All of a sudden, this is on, and I'm like, holy crap. It was like, the anime made me feel stoned, like I was high on the marijuana without being high on the marijuana. I wasn't at all. And all of a sudden, this bat, as soon as the show ends, and this insane show ends, all of a sudden, this bat just floats into my living room. Just so me and the girl I was dating at the time, we screamed and we ran. But I ran outside the house because I'm a smart person, and I said, "Oh, the bat
trapped herself in a."
She ran upstairs.
Oh my god!
And this house was like one of those super old capes.
This,
like,
just, you know what this does? This girl you were dating, she just confirms every single horror movie that you've ever seen.
Exactly.
Because you go, oh, that would never happen. The stupid idiots are running upstairs.
First she ran into my room.
She did exactly that.
And then I'm like, I'm yelling, like, where'd she go? Here's what I saw from the outside, okay? Because the house was just surrounded by windows.
She said, Josh, I can't believe you
had me. Surrounded by, no, she started yelling from upstairs. It's like, well, where'd you go? And I'm like, I ran outside. That was a smart thing.
There's so much more room out here.
And there's no bats, or at least I can't see them. But no, so all of a sudden I see it flying around the living room and the dining room, and then I see it fly upstairs. Now, my staircase spiraled. The bat went up in a spiral. It followed because of the sonar.
Just floating, and it's slow.
It was slowly going up the staircase and making the turns at
first
the exact
of all,
time. It was insane.
As creepy as this bat was at the time, you got to respect the sonar nonsense, right?
Oh, yeah.
To blindly fly up a spiral staircase? That's awesome. Sorry, continue.
No, so then she was trapped, and she finally got out, and I called my roommate at the time, and he made fun of me and all this stuff like that, and his friends made fun of me because they were all out. So we tried calling animal control, but it was like 12 o'clock at night. So they couldn't come out. Tried to call the cops because, you know, that's what the cops of Pawtucket, Rhode Island want
to
deal with.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, well, not a bat in your house. And it ended up where my roommate tried to come in. Oh, we're going to find it. Never found it. And then when we were moving some of his – it was the same person we were talking about for Kirk. Some of his, like, aprons for, like, doing printmaking and shit. The bat came out because that's where it was hiding.
Was this the same day?
Yeah, this is the same day. This is that night. The bat comes out and he runs. He screams and runs from
the tough guy.
Because it's fucking startling. You know, all of a sudden there's a bat flying at you. So I got a plunger, which Justin Rosero would appreciate that because it's an inside joke. I got a plunger and I ran in and I just hit the bat.
Just pop.
I just popped him and he hit the ground and he died. And I felt really bad.
Did you feel bad? Because
I did.
As I heard the story, you lit up a cigarette and sat down without even leaving the room, just like in front of the bat.
No, I didn't light a cigarette in front of the room, in the room, because that wasn't my room. I wasn't allowed to smoke in there.
So the legend has just grown over the years of the plunger bats.
But I don't blame him. And it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, like also, I, even though I believe in a lot of the tenets of Buddhism, you know, it's like I think that like if certain things are causing a problem, like if you have a termite infestation, kill the fucking termites. They shouldn't be living.
Yeah, man, they're called pests.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, like Pied Piper the termites out of your house? No, see, I'm not talking about PETA. I'm talking about getting all of America, get these videos on like the Today Show, because not anyone sees them. Get all America like demanding that chickens are raised like in a free range farm, and that pigs, because pigs are smart, they're like dogs. I feel bad because they taste so good.
Well, here's what I've learned over the years. Like, it took me a while to realize, well, I don't have to like give up the things that I like. Like, I like chicken, I like beef, I like pork. I like animals. Like, the day before I went vegetarian, I went to a game dinner, which is a bunch of, like, animals that have been hunted. Okay? Because it was like, well, I'm going vegetarian tomorrow. So it wasn't like, oh, I can't stand meat. I'm done. It was like, oh, yeah, I have to give up meat tomorrow because I feel like I morally need to. No, but what I found is there's ways to do it outside of it. It just costs a lot of money. And that's the problem. And if that was to happen, the cost of the average amount of food, like chicken or any of that food, any amount of meat would be a lot, especially considering it'd be more people wanting to eat it. A lot of people wouldn't be able to eat the food that they think that they want.
I feel like,
but
if it was a governmental regulation type situation, then they could lower their
get
costs.
The government out of my refrigerator. See, that's the problem with that. Okay, yeah, it makes sense. Hey, let's not let them treat animals like this. But then you've got people in those industries who are paying lobbyists to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Well, I guess maybe it's just our problem then. Because I guess there are enough people out there that don't care about the chickens being stacked up
there
on top of each other.
There is a lot of people that don't care about that. I don't want to say where they're from because I don't want to isolate people. But let's just say there's just a lot of people that don't care.
This is just going to be something I struggle with for the rest of my life. But the way I think of it now is that if I do not have it in me to kill an animal, then I can't, you know, chastise these people for the way that they're killing the animals.
I'm starting to think myself that if I was to live on a farm and, like, doing that, I think I could kill an animal.
I don't think I could.
But
the day I kill an animal,
to me, it would be a very spiritual.
If I can actually kill something, then I can start complaining about the conditions. But until that time, I'm just going to keep enjoying the meat.
Okay, it's good.
Yeah, it's really
especially
good.
Especially at Boneheads.
I'm going to get
their chickens.
I enjoy ripping the flesh off
it's
of the
so
chicken bone.
Good. It's so good.
Like, nobody even knows. So, but Josh, this is why I love you. Because you are the most progressive human being I've ever met.
I don't think so.
Some people, they're born, they just think to themselves, you know, I don't like that animals are treated this way. I'm going to be a vegetarian. And just, even though they, in their deepest inner workings of their soul, they know they want to keep eating meat. But you did it. You converted. Not unlike, you also converted, you were raised a Yankees fan.
I was.
And there are all these Yankees fans in this area who just, you know, drive the Red Sox people crazy in the Northeast. Because, like, what are they doing here? Why are there so many? New York is a big place.
Well, okay. Well, hey, let's backtrack a little. I was raised a Yankees fan for the first, and I was a Yankees fan, we'll say, for the first 22 years of my life.
Yeah. You know,
which is great because I got to see a lot of awesome, like, 80s players who just were on these teams that never won championships or anything, you know, that I liked. Like, for some reason, Steve Sachs was a player I liked.
Oh, yeah.
Why? Why?
Because he was a 5-2 player. Great second base.
Yeah. But I also got to see the winning years, too. But there was, like, something about, you know, like, well, I'll get into that. But to explain your position here about all these Yankee fans here that drive the Red Sox fans crazy, why are they here? They're here because they were raised there, because their families like the Yankees. My dad is a lifelong Rhode Islander. He didn't raise me to be a Yankee fan. He, at that point, he just stopped. At some point in his life, he stopped caring about organized sports, like watching it, following it, or whatever. It's when he stopped playing sports, essentially. He just didn't care at all. However, I found out that he was a Yankee fan growing up. And a lot of it had to do with because of the players that the Yankees had in the 50s and the 60s. My dad's not Italian, but he grew up in an Italian neighborhood, so that probably affected it. But it was the Yogi Berras, it was the Mantles, it was the DiMaggios, it was the Marises, it was all of those players. And, you know, like, the Red Sox, they had some great players too, but, you know, like, and they liked the Red Sox players. They liked, like, Ted Williams. I can't even name other players in the 50s on the Red Sox.
Yeah, there's a few of
them. But I can't. But that's what I was able to gather. So you have the Italian aspect, because for those that don't know, in this state that we live in, Italians dominate a lot of the culture of the state. We're known for calamari was going
Don
to be.
DiMaggio? I'll take Don DiMaggio in the outfield any day over his brother.
Really?
It just doesn't make any sense. I feel like there was some sort of liking the players, or there being Italian guys, or Mickey Mantle sounding cool. Sounding
it was
name.
New York. It was the pinstripes. It was the winning.
But the Red Sox were already here. Making my point. Like, why are there so many families raising their children Yankees fans in New England?
Why? It's just the way it is. It started off with, like, you know, people our age, their grandparents, and then they raised their kids that way. And at that point, then it became a pride thing, because obviously from what we've seen is Red Sox fans give Yankee fans in this area, there's a lot of shit that they give them. So it becomes that, and that's what I've been able to see in my own experience, but also now looking on it from the other side, is that the Yankees fans in New England have developed this, like, this chip on their shoulder. Like, yeah, I'm a Yankees fan. I'm a Yankees fan. You know, like, and that's what I saw. Now, my conversion, though, was based, as oddly enough, on my principles, which would be thrown back in my face.
So what you're saying is that you found it morally comprehensible to root for the Yankees. That's what you're saying.
Yes, but it was based because – it was because at the time I had grown very much to have a problem with just the ridiculous amount of money that the Yankees were willing to spend on any one player. They started doing these insane contracts and every year starting to go out and get all the top-tier free agents at the time. And the big one for me, what really did it, it's like I was totally a Yankees fan until after they lost the 2001 World Series. Now, they lost that World Series. I consider that World Series to be one of the best World Series I've ever seen. It was just like you had all of the – you had the fact that it all got pushed back because of events of 9/11. And then you had this amazing games between the Diamondbacks and the Yankees and a lot of like heroic efforts by players like Curt Schilling coming out of the bullpen on like what, 3 days rest?
Yeah.
2 days rest.
Randy Johnson too.
Their two aces were coming out of the bull. It was just like one of the best World Series I've ever seen. So when the Yankees lost that, I really had no gripe. It was one of those things where I was like, well, yeah, my team that I love lost it, but they've also won this many other World Series in the past years, and they lost an incredible World Series that like I've never seen before in my lifetime. But then what did George Steinbrenner go out and do that year? Because he lost the World Series, he went out and threw a ridiculous amount of money at Jason Giambi. And that was just like the first thing. I was like, hi, the team was really solid. We don't need
– They had Rivera up in the ninth inning.
Huh?
They had Rivera up in the ninth inning. Game 7.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to get to that point every year.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah. There was nothing wrong with what they did, but they went out and do that. So the next year I go, you know, 2002. Again, still a Yankees fan, and I'm watching that, and I'm just like, who they get at the end of 2002?
It's a blur.
Yeah. Well, either way, I'm probably mixing up the years as far as, like, who the free agents were, but they did the same thing at the end of 2002.
Sheffield?
No, because it was someone bigger.
Sheffield's pretty big.
At the time, yeah, No, I don't think it was him. I don't think it was him. But either way, same thing happens at the end of 2002, and I was like, well, that's it. That's it. I'm kind of done. Like, I'm not done being a Yankee fan, but I'm really not. I think I'm just like, and I said, I'm taking a step back, and I'm not fucking wearing any team's colors this year at all. And then what happened was I started watching Nessun a lot. Because it was like at that point I was such a huge baseball fan that I just wanted to watch baseball every night. And there was no way to do that with the Yankees or anything else. So I started watching Nessun a lot and I started listening on the radio a lot. Because I just found myself sitting in parking lots waiting for people all the time. And I'm just like, oh, I'm going to listen to this game. And I actually fell in love with that 2003 Red Sox team. And I'd fallen out of love.
Very likable.
To the point where at the end of the ALCS in 2003, when Aaron Boone hit that home run, I had found myself that I was rooting for the Red Sox to win that game. And that I actually felt like my heart had been broken by him hitting that home run. And then that's when I said, wait a second, Josh, you're completely – you shouldn't feel this way if the team that you – your favorite team just won.
Yeah.
I didn't even watch that World Series. I didn't even watch that World Series that year.
It's sort of like the old psychotherapist trick where it's like they're trying to decide between two things. And it's like, all right, you put it in each hand and it's like random.
Yeah.
Admit it. You want one more than the other one. You just kind of felt it.
Well, that's what it was at the end of that year. And it was like I really had – I don't know if I just been like – if I just – because I fell in love with that team. But the other thing, you know, it was – Then they went out and tried to get A-Rod. The Red Sox tried to get A-Rod too that season, at the end of that offseason. But it was when the Red Sox couldn't get it because they couldn't afford his ridiculous contract. And the Yankees were like, yeah, we're going to do it. And we got the money to pay too. Like, it was just like, how much money are you going to balloon your payroll to? Now, the irony is that in the years to follow, as the Red Sox got bigger and bigger, their payroll became also ridiculously ballooned. But at that point, there's no going back.
Yeah.
And I love the Red Sox.
Weirdly enough, I wasn't in favor of the A-Rod deal for the Red Sox.
Looking back.
I don't know. I think I probably still would have done it. I think I probably – because even though they won in 2007, I just hated the Beckett deal. Even though Hanley Ramirez also turned out to be a dink, because I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, he didn't really turn out to be a dink.
Nah, he's a dink.
I wouldn't go that far. And Beckett really wasn't a dink until we realized how much. First, we were really into Josh Beckett.
Yeah, I mean, everyone liked Josh Beckett for a while. First of all, I didn't even know when we started down this path that 03 would come up, but it's still kind of like, I'm really kind of sad now.
Because of 03? But 04 was amazing.
It was, but it doesn't really matter.
Because it was just a sad moment.
Just the memory of that day, like sitting at the kitchen table, I just drank like 12 Heinekens in a row. It happened to be Heineken because someone had Heineken in the fridge. It wasn't even my beer.
You have to start drinking when that's happening. It was so
I couldn't sleep. I didn't sleep. I had to work the next day. I just sat at the kitchen table. I just drank a 12-pack of Heineken.
I listened to that game and watched that game in like 4 different places. Because it's like I started off at work, I had to listen, and then like the guy who came in to relieve me, he had like a TV in his big old conversion van, like weird van that he had, you know, like he had one of those fucking van with the bucket seats, you know, that like the one you wanted your parents to have when you were like 7.
Yeah.
Like he had that. So he breaks out his TV, so then we're watching his TV in his van, and I'm like, I gotta go. And so then I got in my car, and I, you know, I'm driving up to Providence to like some club night at the time. That it was at a bar, and I knew they would have a TV. Like someone made it. So it was like 4 different places.
Yeah, I sat in the same position on my bed. And
we're talking a lot about 03 today, because that bat story happened the same year. Same.
That was a rough time.
Yeah, it was a very rough time.
But yeah, obviously they went on to have some amazing, 04, 07. And this year, you know, it's kind of worth it. All these heart-wrenching moments of being a Red Sox and New England fan, but like this weekend, what the heck was that about?
Well, first, can I point out something though? Before we get to that, I got to experience that disappointment again though last year, with the Red Sox, or the past 2 years, both the collapse in September and then the abysmal year that was last year. It was one of those things where you're just like, I'm like, oh, this is my penance.
Well, I wouldn't say last year was heartbreaking. Last year started off, it was just going the way it was going to go. So you kind of already got in
well,
the mode
it was
of,
the finding out about the season before, everything that had happened with the chicken and beer shit and all of that. And then going, and then just last year being like, oh, this team hates everyone. They hate each other. They hate their manager. The manager, I think, hates them.
Oh, my God. I really wanted
Bobby Valentine. Do you know what he was like to me? I picture him as last year.
What?
Picture him as the guy that's in charge of Police Academy.
Oh, Commandant Lazar?
Yeah.
Many, many Red Sox games I've managed. Harris?
I'm talking about Harris.
Proctor, the guy with the baton.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm talking about the guy that was like out to get them.
Yeah, it's Harris.
Okay, I'm talking about Harris. That's how I picture Bobby Valentine with the Red Sox last year. That type of relationship.
I don't know. Harris was kind of a genius. He's just getting foiled by smarter people than him, like Mahoney.
Why are we talking about Police Academy? But you're right. This weekend was huge.
Because Valentine was an idiot.
Yeah.
Is my point.
He invented the wrap sandwich. But anyway, this weekend to be in New England was just second to none, because there's been a lot of incredible sports weekends in New England, but it was that Sunday was really, really.
As far as a football regular season game, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, especially against the Patriots, obviously played the Saints. Oh.
A lot of Brady haters out there.
A lot of Brady haters.
But, you know, Brady hasn't had a moment like that, like to take a team back, needing a touchdown, under 2 minutes, no timeouts, mm-hmm. boom. And he does it. So
yeah, Lord knows we want him to do that in a Super Bowl or two. But
well, he did, actually, didn't he?
Yes.
I recall Randy Moss scoring a touchdown with 2 minutes left and to put him up by 4.
Yeah.
Which would have been a Joe Montana-esque, you know, going down in history type drive if it weren't for an act of God. But See, okay, so now we're talking about 03 and 07.
No, let's get off of... See, for our loyal listeners,
I'm just going to go slip my wrists.
2007 Patriots season, or specifically the Super Bowl, is one of the sorest subjects to ever talk about with Jeff.
That and the Aaron Boone game.
Yeah.
Or the second Super Bowl.
But
or
either way.
Anything involving Green Bay
90s. You know what, Jeff? That doesn't matter, because like what we saw this weekend...
All right, this brings me to another principle by which I live my life. We've already covered one today, the War and Peace principle. I hope you're all writing these down, because once you learn them all, you'll be able to live in a true and proper way, and the path to righteousness will be set upon you. This is the never leave a game principle, ever. Did you see how many people were leaving that game?
Never leave a game.
They were leaving, like, thousands of people, yeah. Like half of the stadium leaving. It's over 2 minutes left. They're only down by 6 points. Like, what the hell is the matter with you people? They all deserve it. They all deserve the pain.
Yeah, because they missed what could have been. My sister was at that Patriot game, okay? And she actually said after, like, I saw her yesterday. She's like, is there any, like, more storybook, like, that was her first Patriots game, too. Wow. Is there any, like, story, anything more storybook or movie-like than what happened, what she got to see?
If it was overtime, that would have been
overtime. But I'd say finishing up in regulation with 5 seconds left is better than overtime.
Yeah, that's true, because in overtime you can't be trailing.
Yeah. They were trailing.
Yeah, it was pretty perfect. It was a perfect game.
Yeah. But there's a lot of haters. We saw one person, a mutual friend on Facebook, start talking trash about Patriots fans and the Patriots.
Yeah, Brady throws an incomplete pass, and he says something to the effect of, "Oh, all these Eli haters! What are you saying now? Brady's even worse than Eli. I mean, what kind of an idiot do you have to be? Even if you're the biggest New York Giants fan in the world."
Well, first of all, you wait till the game is over.
Yeah, the game wasn't over. You start calling into to question Brady's abilities and character and all this stuff, putting him against not even somebody that is fair to compare him to.
Yeah,
even in the most biased, lopsided conversation.
Well, but that's the problem. It's like talking to someone who's like, I don't even know how to compare. It's like,
but it's almost worth it to see those kind of posts, because you see that, oh, how do you like Brady now? Eli's even better, blah, blah. But then the comeback happens, and it's like, oh, I was just joking. I was just trying to stir some stuff up.
Yeah, they quickly have to backtrack, and like he looks like a bigger idiot because people are like,
that is the best.
Yeah.
There was a guy on the PTB site that was saying, oh, the Spurs are champions. Congratulations, Spurs. Remember that?
Yes, I do, actually.
That was terrible.
Yeah, no, that was several people, actually.
I actually blame them.
It wasn't just...
Directly.
It wasn't just him. It was actually, like, there were several people. I believe even Justin did it.
Yeah, it was Justin and Richie.
Yeah.
Just posting nonstop
about
the Heat losing, and their season's a failure, and now I have to watch the NBA season with them talking about LeBron James's penis. Every single, like, oh, and here we got the Pacers and the Knicks and LeBron James.
Have
LeBron
you seen
James
his penis?
LeBron James that.
Have
LeBron
you
James
seen his
is
penis?
A magnificent penis. But whatever.
But what you described, Jeff, is what Kendrick Lamar calls poetic justice.
Exactly.
Also, what Tupac calls poetic
justice. I bet
justice.
Kendrick Lamar has read War and Peace.
I would
be willing to bet that.
He's a well-read guy. Nas has, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I don't know about Nas.
Nah, you don't
I feel like he's a bad dude. I want to like him, but I feel like he's kind of crusty.
He's a little bit crusty. A little grimy.
Still hating on the white man in this day and age. Come on.
Get over it.
Enough already.
God.
They're buying
what
all
more
your records.
Do you want?
Jesus Christ.
Well, as you know, Jeff, though, that wasn't the only comeback of the weekend.
Yeah, game two, man.
Game two, which is so weird to say.
If
game
anybody
two
is listening, listening in Detroit right now, you might want to turn off the radio.
Jordan Duncan. I don't know if he listens, but I think that guy's from Detroit.
Or as my grandmother pronounces it, Detroit.
Wouldn't it be Detroit? Because the O-I gives it the oi.
It's like Detroit. Like she pauses between the O and the I. It's hilarious.
Oh, that is hilarious. And no, has anybody corrected her? Or did they just let it go? It's like, oh, grandma.
The thing about my grandmother is that once she says a word, she'll say it the same way. No matter how much I try to, I'll be like, oh, yeah, Detroit. Detroit just scored. Oh, Detroit's doing good. Detroit.
Detroit. I love that. I love your grandma.
God bless her.
I think I have only met your grandma, like, it's sad because it's like you hang out with her a lot.
Not enough times to try her homemade home fries?
No. That doesn't matter. My dad owned a diner throughout my entire childhood, and his home fries were better than any. I've never had home fries better than his, so.
Hers is very tasty. We'll have to have like a...
Yeah, we'll have to, I mean...
Cook-off. You know, it's a cook-off.
Yeah, but in my memory, it's always like those were the best things in the world. But the Red Sox come back. It's funny you said, like, game two, because it's like, well, yeah, it was only game two, but it was incredibly important.
Well, in these games, you can... Like the Gibson home run, that was a game one.
Yeah,
every true. Game is big because the other team, like, shits themselves. If they lost in a poor way, it's like palpable momentum.
Yeah. No, I agree. And plus, I mean, when you're talking about Detroit's starting pitching and how, like, just lights out their rotation is.
Yeah.
And then Leyland has been really good at being like, well, this guy, like, in the Anibal Sanchez had the no-hitter going in the first game, but nope, you take that guy out and you go through as many pitches as you need.
Welcome to the mini guys.
Yeah.
This is old school here.
Yeah, exactly. But that was incredible. And for anyone who doesn't follow sports and they're still listening because they're intrigued by what we have to say about everything in life.
Yeah, I think we're making people like sports. Yes.
What happened was David Ortiz is actually – so what are the exact circumstances? I know that – I forgot how the bases got loaded. Did they walk someone to get the bases loaded?
Funny story. I was asleep for that inning.
Oh, crazy. Okay. So you missed the entire home – you missed everything?
Yeah. I saw the Johnny Gomes.
I saw
the walk off hit. Okay. But I didn't see the
well, that was Celta Lamacchia, the walk off.
Yeah, Gomes scored.
Okay, I know what you mean. All right. Well, I forgot exactly how the bases got loaded, but things kind of fell apart for Detroit in that inning. And David Ortiz comes up and hits a monster grand slam. I won't even say monster grand slam because it wasn't even that monster of a hit. You've seen the replay since. It just barely went over the wall.
It was a line drive shot.
Yeah.
It was a rope.
Line drive shot, rope over the fence. Torrey Hunter died and then was resurrected. Hitting the wall really hard, but making one of the best. If the Red Sox win the World Series this year, that shot of the police officer who was in the bullpen putting his hands up.
Yeah, the big fat police officer.
With Torrey Hunter's legs going over, it's got to be the defining. It doesn't even matter what happens. That is going to be like one of the highlights of the American League playoffs this year.
It's a great photograph.
And
it's
they won today, obviously. Now, Jeff, here's what happened to me, though, during that game. I actually didn't pay attention to a big portion of the beginning of the game because those are my days off. And for those who don't know, I write some stuff for Place to Be Nation. I do a review of a show that's on Sunday nights every week. Don't laugh. It's Once Upon a Time.
Nothing to laugh about. It's a good show.
Yeah, it's a good show. You know, it's got its ups and downs, but it's good.
Very, very hot. The Queen.
The Queen is hot. The Queen is hot.
That's really all you need to know.
Yeah, and Jennifer Goodwin's on it. Jennifer Goodwin. We've talked about her before.
Oh, yeah, right. Warren Cheswick's girlfriend.
Yeah, she's a... Well, now she's actually marrying one of the guy who she's romantically linked with on the show.
Oh, I love when that happens.
Oh, my God. It ends so poorly every time.
That's so adorable.
Every time.
They're in love in real life, guys. They're in love in real life.
They're in love in real life, but it's palpable. It truly is palpable. But either way, so I have to watch that show on Sunday nights because I need to get a review done the next day and I need to take notes when I'm watching it. I can't just watch it and just turn around and be like, you know, you got to figure out. I like to do my reviews like themes and figuring out like, you know, the big questions, especially on that show because it may be like a silly fairy tale show to some, but it really ends up like Lost a lot of the times where they're dealing with like really big things like fate and destiny and choice and all of the stuff like that. So I skipped basically the beginning of the game. And then after that, because I was doing all the stuff, I just kept – and I had so much things always taping on my DVR on Sunday nights because that's a big night for the type of television I watch. Homeland, Walking Dead was premiering, Eastbound and Down. You know, so it's just like one thing after another. So it's like when that ended, I had to just throw something random on there that I had that's like not, you know, the Daily Show or something, or like an episode of The Soup I fell asleep to. Just threw that on there while I was like finishing up my notes. So finally, when I leave my room and go into the living room, and I check, I turn the game on. As soon as I turn the game on, that's when the Red Sox got on the board. So I went, well, obviously, I've got the juju going, okay? That was my thought. That was my thought.
Noticing a pattern.
I'm noticing a pattern. I'm like, oh, wow.
You gotta let it ride.
I gotta let it ride. So, like, now I'm really paying attention to the game. But like, in the periphery, I was actually, I had a girl over. And, you know, we were hanging out. And I was talking with her, but not really focusing on the game completely. It's just, like, there. And it's, like, I see it out of the corner of my eye, and I'm looking over. But I'm not standing in the living room. I'm not sitting down or anything. I'm just, you know, carrying on. So eventually, eventually what I end up deciding to do is you know, it's fall.
Were you telling your girl about how if you see a bat to run outside and not upstairs?
No. I mean, I don't, if they can't figure that out for themselves, that's how I know if they're the right one.
That's your test.
That's my test.
You actually set the bat free.
Yes, every time. That story I told earlier, it's happened 80 times.
Totally fake.
So here's what I said. I'm like, I go to have, like, you know how I like pie.
You love pie.
I love pie. I've ranted on it many times. My birthday weekend, that's like all I talked about when I got drunk that night. I want to go have pie. Right. So I decide to have a slice of pie in the kitchen. All right. So I go, I get the pie out, I put it on the kitchen table
Rhubarb?
Counter.
Rhubarb.
No, it was just apple. It's the fall.
Oh, yeah.
So I put the pie on the table, and I go to have that first taste. Moment that pie hits my tongue, Big Poppy hits a home run. Okay? Wow. Miraculous moment, okay? So then
you
I
got
do
pie. You got
then
the
I finish. Then I finish what I gotta do. Okay, I finish what I gotta do. I you know, I eat the pie, and then. And then I do, you know, go through the whole thing. You know, I, like, go and I stick my dick in it. Like, the documentary.
Yeah.
That documentary from where we're at. Wait, did I? Oh, I got it back. Did I mention that the pie was vagina?
The pie was vagina.
Okay. Oh, I'm trying to use metaphors, but I really can't. Okay. So
you weren't eating pie.
No.
You were having sex.
I was going down on a girl in the kitchen.
Okay. Was she on the table?
She was on the table. Yes.
Interesting. I have not.
The moment. The moment. It happened. The moment that happened.
The moment you started, or the moment she finished.
The moment I started. Okay. I hear from the other room, and it's going back to the wall. It's already 100 on the round, and it's gone grand slam. And I just.
Did you stop and leave?
No. No.
Of course, because you're not a rude person.
I finished what I needed to do, and I went and stuck my dick in the pie, like they did in the documentary.
The documentary.
And then I said, immediately I was done, I was like, did you hear David Ortiz hit a grand slam?
She was like, what?
She was like, no, I didn't.
How
I like,
could you be paying attention to that?
I'd be like, I couldn't stop, though, because if I had stopped, then the game would, like, obviously I needed to do what I needed to do.
And so obviously you need to be eating pie. Every time the Red Sox are playing.
Well, unfortunately.
Can you do this for 3 hours a few more times?
I can try. I mean, things are going to get tired.
That is a magical story.
I
did not see that coming.
No,
I did not see that. No pun intended.
Neither did she. Oh, wait. I don't know how that works. I don't know. But no, seriously. I you don't understand, like, where my brain, like, it actually reminds me of another story that our friend Mark told us many years ago, which was a friend that he had who had started to go down on a female, his girlfriend at the time. And I guess, like, you know, that instance where, yeah, that happens to me a lot where, like, there's TV on. Like, I just hear it all the time. It's like you somehow, however it works out, like, you've got the TV on, and then you end up having to hear during this whole time some television show. And, like, I can't just, I like, pretend the TV's not there, but I always hear it.
Yeah, you're taking in the information.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this particular guy, it was an episode of The Wonder Years, and it was the episode where Kevin gets himself into a pickle, and his father says to him, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when we set out to deceive." Is that how it goes?
When first we practice to deceive.
Okay, there it is. So as the father on The Wonder Years started saying this to Kevin, the guy, as told to us by our friend Mark, he actually finished the line
when he was eating pie.
Yeah, when he was eating pie. Mm. And the girl that time got really mad and just...
It does seem a bit like it's... The brain is there and your mind automatically connects to it, but it does seem a bit like inappropriate.
Like he shouldn't be. But in this circumstance, with David Ortiz's grand slam...
Because he knew exactly what he was going
to
say.
This was what needed to be done, apparently. And I had to go through with it.
You know what?
Do you know how much it took not to stop?
Yes. It took a lot. You were in the minority, my friend.
Yeah. I wanted to just be like, oh my god, David Ortiz just did a home run, a grand slam! You just tied him! Because I knew before he went to bat that I had the thought, if he hits a grand slam,
David Ortiz hits a grand slam right now.
No, but things don't work out like that.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of like make one motion, it's over. You're committed.
Well, this was obviously, I mean, you don't end up on a kitchen counter or a table.
Yeah, it's kind of heated, I guess.
You don't end up there without it just, you know, also like...
There was a lot of passion, is what you're saying.
Yeah, but not like the show passions. Not a lot of that.
Actually, there was. I don't know if there was any Red Sox games on in the background. They didn't have TVs in soap operas. You notice that? They had everything but TVs. It would just be like, they'd have a whiskey bar in every room. And amazing tapestries, but no televisions. Like, what are these people doing?
I've never noticed that.
It's crazy. They're just standing around. They would walk into a room, and there would be a character just standing there holding a drink. It was incredible. That's why I love them so much.
So, Jeff, that's my amazing story of how
That is amazing. I would like to do a poll to see how many guys... That should be a commercial. If we can get to the point where you can have someone doing that in a commercial...
Yeah.
And it's okay. It's not, like, too over-the-top, like, vulgar or whatever. That would be a hilarious commercial. Because I bet it would be, like, 65% of guys would just, like, leave. Just run. Leave the girl on the table. Screw it. I'll deal with the consequences later.
I thought about it for a second,
but... Bud Light commercial. Boom.
No, it was just... that was not going
to
happen.
You are a truly great man. I'm proud of you for your conviction to both the team and the girl.
Well, that was the other thing. I've seen Silver Linings Playbook, and what I've realized is, and I've also known you for many years, and you're a firm believer in, if you're doing something and it's helping the team, you don't stop. You got to continue.
Don't mess with the juju. However small it is.
That's what I did. And I didn't really contribute to them winning at all, except other than the fact that I just kept talking about over and over about how amazed I was. That's what I kept repeating. I can't believe it. When I went down on you,
it's a grand slam. The one thing that a guy
your vagina is magic.
The pitcher could not let him possibly do that. It must have been us. It must have been. I love it. That's my favorite story of all time. I think you should have been the MVP of that game.
Well, I mean, we've got to spread this around. Obviously, we've got to get the story out there. So any of you listeners who are out there who want to spread the tale of the man who was performing cunnilingus in an effort
to save
the Red Sox season.
I'm just going back a few minutes in this conversation how I was just trying to like ask you questions as you were telling the story and I asked what kind of pie it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Like what do you don't remember what kind of pie it was? It was, I don't know, apple.
It was, what?
I wasn't expecting this. This is a sidetrack.
Yeah, this is a sidetrack, buddy. I had this whole pie thing going.
I'm sorry, I
wanted to lead the listeners into thinking, oh, he's just having pie. Well, vagina pie? What? Get out of here!
You're not supposed
to talk about that on a podcast.
I'm so sorry that I ruined that perfect transition.
What's funny is, you know, I've had a couple days to think about it, and I had it in my head.
Yeah.
And you ripped it from me.
You gotta have the Jeff contingencies ready. You gotta think of all these things. It's like the guy...
What if he asked what kind?
Yeah, you gotta be quick. That's not important. That's what you should have said.
No.
Awesome story, bro.
Yeah, so this weekend was obviously a big weekend for both of us. So next weekend, hopefully is as eventful. The Red Sox won today, so they're up 2-1. So I don't have to do as much heavy lifting this week, I don't think. But if it gets down to it, I will.
You do what you got to do.
I do what you got to do.
And you let me know if you need help, like moving furniture or anything. Any way I could help.
No, I got it.
All right. I'll be there for you.
I'm a big boy.
That's true. You know what you're doing.
So I guess it's time to go. We've talked about like five things for an hour and a half.
There were five things, a lot of subtext.
yeah, a lot of subtext. So if hopefully you come back this week, you weren't offended by or turned off by sports talk or cunnilingus or anything like that.
But most importantly, for all you Christopher Columbus fans out there,
suck it. Right?
Yes.
That's
no
where you're going. That's where you're going with that. No apologies. Don't apologize for genocidal.
Vasco
maniacs.
Da Gama was a better explorer. We all know it.
Hands down. So thanks for listening. Now, if you want to hit us up at Twitter, that would be awesome. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know what you think of us. If you have any criticisms, we probably won't listen, but we will read it, I guess. You can find me at Joshua Richer.
I'm at Mashad Douche. And also check out the Place to Be Nation fan page on Facebook. You can leave comments and stuff up
Click
there.
Click that, like that. Check out all the stuff they've got going on at Place to Be Nation. We've had a lot of great stuff this week. Actually, Parv, our resident Doctor Who and music expert, I did a really comprehensive guide through all of Bob Dylan's albums. That was a really good thing. You should probably check that out.
Yeah, if you like Bob Dylan.
If you like Bob Dylan.
Read right
and if you're looking to get into Bob Dylan, it was actually really good, too, for letting people know what to avoid and pretty much later albums.
That's how it always goes with people.
I also did David Bowie, and I don't know. There's a lot of great content over there at the placetobenation.com. And also, if you live in Rhode Island, go to Boneheads.
Go to Boneheads. You'll probably see us.
Hopefully. Or our honorary table.
You can eat some dead chickens together.
So we'll see you next week here at Richer and the Mailman. No. Are we done with the postal tip of the week?
Yeah.
Okay, no proposal tip of the week.
Pending further review, I feel like maybe I shouldn't be talking about that stuff.
Good call. I noticed we haven't had that or any wild attempts at gambling. So.
Yeah, well, the gambling might make a return.
Okay, good. Don't disappoint. So I'm Josh Richer, and he's Jeff Machado, the mailman, and we'll see you here next week.
Yeah, see you later. Yeah.